Elon Musk is milking this whole Twitter thing for all it is worth. He's giving shareholders a total headache. I'm sure the board is going crazy. The bankers are going crazy. But here's the deal. At the end of the day, he's got to buy the company. He really does. I mean, otherwise, he's facing a $1 billion fee right out of his own pocket, along with a giant lawsuit. I'm going to explain all of this because at the end of the day, I do have a feeling Elon Musk is going to own Twitter for $54.20 a share. And if I were on the board, I would not take a penny less. I will explain. Of course, Elon argues back that, hey, a lot of these Twitter users are fake. In fact, there's a new report that shows us half of the president's Twitter users are, in fact, fake. But, when you sign an agreement that says you forfeit all your rights to due diligence, as Elon Musk did, kind of hard to go back after the fact and point to the president's Twitter account as being half fake. We will discuss. I do want to also point out that Marsha Blackburn is joining us again on the program to talk all about big tech. She doesn't like what they're doing to our kids. I don't like it either. And she's here. She's got some solutions. We will discuss as the market sees yet again another sell-off. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Trish Regan Show. It's so good to have you here. I am Trish. A quick reminder, subscribe to this channel. If you haven't already, do subscribe to this channel. It's really, really important to me. If you're listening or if you haven't listened to the audio version of this podcast on Apple iTunes or on Spotify, do make sure you go, you subscribe there, download the podcast. I'm there every single day for you. I want to talk momentarily about this market because before we get into the Twitter stuff, Twitter actually traded a little bit higher today. I think everybody's coming to their senses on that one, that Elon is not so easily going to get away from this. The market overall is still struggling. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of fear that all this inflation in our economy is going to catch up with consumers in a big way. We're already starting to see evidence of that. In fact, when you look at the major retailers, they had some pretty weak earnings reports and pretty weak projections for the future, which tells you that, yes, things are slowing down. You know what? When you're paying record prices at the gas pumps, you don't have as much money to spend on all the discretionary items that you normally spent money on. Not to mention, of course, food prices as well, which have absolutely soared. I mean, people have to make ends meet. We saw reflected in Thursday's jobs numbers that weekly unemployment claims are also starting to tick up. So there could be some softness in the job market. The job market, of course, as we know, has been on steroids. But if that changes and you see this slowdown in spending, well, none of this is good, right? And that's why you have a market, the S&P, increasingly looking like it's going to be in bear territory. One thing I do want to point out, though, is that the sell-off we've seen over the last couple of days has actually been quite logical. I mean, sometimes it's just, everybody freaks out and they start selling like mad and there's no rhyme or reason to it. But in this case, you do have evidence of a consumer, an American consumer, that's pulling back. So logically, people start to sell. One of the things I always look at, you've heard me say this before, is the VIX. It's the volatility index. And interestingly, we did not see the VIX above 30 on Thursday, telling me once again that, you know what? People are doing this in a rational way. Once you start to see 34, 35, 36, then you know that there's real fear in the marketplace. So I guess the point of that is to say there could be additional downside to come. So be on the lookout for that. It's one of the reasons why I like having some safe havens in my portfolio. It's one of the reasons why I always say buy gold, keep it for the long term. You can probably get it at a pretty decent price right now, at least relative to some of the highs that it's had. And hold on to it. Hold on to it because this is the vehicle that's going to help you even out inflation issues in your portfolio and some of those ups and downs. I mean, typically, when the market goes down, you often see people fleeing to things like gold. I mean, that's a pretty traditional trajectory. They also flee to things like treasuries, government treasuries, right? Because this is what provides the safety, the port in the storm, if you would. And of course, in Thursday's trading, I was just checking the price of gold for you. We did see gold trade up 1.35% to $1,840 an ounce, proving again my theory that people move into these vehicles like gold during times of concern. But I like it, no matter what. I just kind of am one of those people that believes in having 1% to 5% of your portfolio in gold and holding on to it for dear life. So if you're interested in this, I want you to call my friends over at Legacy PM Investments, Legacy Precious Metals Investments. LegacyPMInvestments.com is their website. Their phone number is 1-866-589-0560. They can totally hook you up and help you out because it can be a little bit complicated, especially if you want something like a gold-backed IRA, which is a great way to help even out inflation concerns in your portfolio. So give them a call, LegacyPMInvestments.com, 1-866-589-0560. Moving on to Elon Musk and his Twitter bid, which is just sucking all the oxygen out of the room in every way. I do believe this deal ultimately will get done. It is somewhat possible that he may be able to negotiate a lower price. Although, look, if I were the board, I wouldn't go for that. He signed up for $54.20 a share. And by the way, he did so waiving his rights to all due diligence. So just because the tech market starts to crater, you can't come back and say after the fact, after the contract signed, hey, you know what? I don't really think it's worth that because it turns out you got a lot of fake accounts. Well, all this commotion and all this fear that Elon may not go through with the deal has sent the stock down to $37.31 a share. So as it hangs out here at $37, you can see Elon Musk is like, uh-huh, you know what? He's got him right over a barrel saying, look, you know, I'm your only white knight. I'm your only hope. In actuality, that's not entirely how it works just because there are contracts in place. This would be like someone coming along and saying, I'm going to buy your house. And I am going to waive all rights to an inspection. I am buying it, you know, just as is. And I'm going to pay you cash for the house. I don't even need financing. I don't need any of that. So that person signs all the papers. And then maybe the housing market has gone a little south. They come back and say, you know, I have a problem. The air conditioning system is not working the way I thought. And you're like, but wait a second. You signed all the papers saying, you know, you didn't need an inspection. You didn't need this. You didn't need that. This is why we have a system of laws. This is why we have contracts. This is why we have courts. Well, guess what? That person that signed up to buy your house, they're still going to have to buy your house. Or you can sue the pants off of them and they're going to owe you probably a pretty hefty breakup fee, right? Again, the $1 billion that Elon Musk would have to pay. He did put forward a total price tag of $44 billion. So he may think I'm coming out ahead, but just imagine the lawsuits that are going to come forward because shareholders are going to be like, wait a second, this company isn't worth as much because Elon kind of trashed it, right? So that's where they'll go with this. I think the good news is I'm a big believer in Elon Musk. I think he's a brilliant guy. I think he's a visionary. I think he's going to do great things for Twitter. I want him to get the company. I think that it will be a better company by having Elon Musk and his vision there. And so I think the deal's just going to have to go through. Now, in the past, you've occasionally seen these things on Wall Street. I remember the Tiffany deal where the price was renegotiated. It was in part because it was like, you know, happening during COVID. And I think everybody was scared out of their minds. But in this case, yeah, you know, you might be scared that tech valuations are going down, but that's not enough to change the price. And so if I were on the board of Twitter, first of all, I would have taken the deal, which they did. And then I would say, Elon, guess what? You're sticking to that deal. We have a contract. It's in writing and you're paying $54.20 a share. He's like, well, but wait, like, you know, this business isn't worth what I thought because, you know, the Twitter followers, they aren't all real. Well, you waived your right to due diligence. So I guess you waived your right to know that even the president of the United States' Twitter followers are not all real. In fact, there's a new report. It was first published in Newsweek showing that 50%, there was basically a search done on the followers, and 50% of President Biden's Twitter followers, it seems, are fake accounts, bots. The same company says up to 70% of Elon's may also be fake. So yeah, Twitter may have a bot problem, but that's all the more reason why they got to get in there. Someone like Musk has to get in there, change these algorithms to prevent all those bots from being there, authenticate accounts, verify accounts, and make it a free sort of open place, free in terms of speech. I mean, not free. I mean, you can charge. I think they need to figure out a way to monetize this thing. And everyone will be better off. we've had such a crazy time in terms of the policing of speech, courtesy of these big tech companies. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating to me, certainly, because, look, I've been a journalist for 20 some odd years. I have worked for the world's biggest news organizations. I've won many awards for my reporting. And yet, occasionally, I'll do something really crazy, like, I don't know, a video on the yield of the 10-year bond. And I'll get a note back from YouTube, owned by Google, saying this is insensitive content. I'm like, again, wait a second. Like, I've been a reporter for a long time. Believe me, I know what sensitive or insensitive content is. And talking about bond yields on the 10-year note? No. I don't think so. But this is the world in which we live, in which conservatives are unfairly penalized. And yet the garbage that they send to our kids, I've seen it. I've seen it myself. I have three kids. And you know what? I took their computers away. Now we have one computer in the kitchen. They're not allowed to have the YouTube accounts anymore because I've seen what gets thrown to our children, and it's total garbage. And that needs to stop. There needs to be accountability for that. You want to talk about sensitive material or insensitive material. You want to talk about bad stuff. Look at what they are feeding our children and look at what we've seen in our society as a result. Well, I just sat down with Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, Republican from Tennessee, who is fired up about this issue. And I give her so much credit for being that concerned. She has joined forces, bipartisan forces, I would add, with Richard Blumenthal, the senator from Connecticut. And together, they're trying to get big tech to answer some of these big questions. In the meantime, because, you know, it takes time, given the lobbying efforts of some of these tech companies, in the meantime, she has come forward with a guide for parents. I'm going to share it with you at the end of this interview. But first, I want you to hear from the senator herself how concerned she is. I mean, what's going on with big tech and its effect on our young people?
Well, this is something that Senator Blumenthal and I, on a bipartisan basis, we put a lot of attention on this because we were hearing from teachers and pediatricians and parents about the adverse impact on children of the content that they were being served up on YouTube and Instagram and the perils of Snapchat and TikTok and the way these were building profiles, basically a virtual you of our children. And when we talk about the pandemic and how difficult it was, one of the positives that came from that is that parents realized what their children were being shown and how they were being spammed by big tech. And a lot of parents realized what some of us have been saying for quite a period of time. When you are online, you are the product. They are data mining you. They are tracking you. They're following you. They're selling your information. They are profiting because, as the Instagram CEO said when he was before us, they're big advertising companies. And they put their product out there for free so that you get on. The longer they can keep your eyeballs glued to the screen, the more money they're going to make. That means they can charge more for their advertising. Now, what we have also seen them do is to push forward. If somebody goes in and they look up a video about dieting, then they begin to push more and more videos about dieting and pushing kids into bad eating habits. There are all of these videos on how to commit suicide or how music to commit suicide by or how to set up accounts that your parents don't know about. They're on TikTok and Snap. You have pedophiles that will follow children and drug dealers that will use this to come in contact with children. They're misrepresenting themselves as teenagers. And then they establish an online relationship with your child. So we have the Kids Online Safety Act that will put some parameters in place. We're looking forward to moving that out of committee and pushing some guidance that will be there for parents. And I've also done a one sheet that parents can pull down on my website, blackburn.senate.gov, or grab it on social media from one of my sites. But this is a good checklist for parents, things to do to keep their kids safe during the summer so that they know what the children are seeing and what they're being exposed to.
You know, you think, Senator, about the rise, for example, in anorexia among adolescent girls. You look at the statistics on suicide, which it's so tragic. And then you see these algorithms, and these companies know what they're doing.
Yes,
I mean, as the CEO testified to you, they're ad companies. They're just trying to make a buck. How do we as a society, though, draw a line? I mean, I'm all about personal responsibility. I get that. You know, I yanked the computers away and said, you know, we're putting screens on all this, and it's going to sit in the kitchen. But still, you know, for as many parents that may get involved like that, there are plenty that will miss that or maybe aren't tech savvy. I get it. And our kids are the ones that are the victims.
You're right about that. And that is one of the reasons for doing a guide. Until we can get this legislation passed and big tech reined in, then giving parents the information on how to set those controls is important, because you're right. Not every parent is tech savvy. Parents that grew up with Facebook and now they're the parent, they don't realize how this has changed and the exposure that is there on their children. So it is important to get that information out so that they realize they can reset these privacy settings. They can put these filters in place so that their children are not going to be tracked and followed. You know, Trish, last weekend, I was talking with a parent, and they knew I had worked on this issue, and they said, hey, I've got to tell you a quick story. Their teenage son was in a group game online with some of his friends. Three of them were playing. They noticed that a fourth player came into their game. Someone had hacked into their game. And then at the same time, all these other kids were shut down on that game. Well, this is somebody who is tracking kids. This is somebody who is trying to get the information on these kids. But these kids were smart enough to figure it out. And one of the kids told their parent about it. This just shows you whether they're doing a game online together or whether they're on TikTok or Snap. Parents need to be aware, and they need to help these kids and their friends set these privacy settings so that they are not exposed to people that are trying to exploit children.
I love that you have legislation as well. And I love that it's bipartisan, because this shouldn't be a partisan issue. This is an issue
right,
for every American. We need to protect our kids. What kind of response are you getting from the tech companies? And how might this legislation, should it go forward, actually truly protect our kids?
Well, of course, you've got some of the tech companies that don't like it, because their worth is based on the number of eyeballs that they control and the length of time that they can keep those eyeballs looking on their site. But what this would also do is require these tech companies to raise the age that kids can get on some of these platforms. 8, 9, 10-year-old children have no business being on some of these platforms. You've mentioned some of the things being served up to these kids, and it's completely inappropriate. So raising that level to 16 would be important, and then having these tech companies enforce that. Likewise, giving kids and parents the toolbox so that they can set more of these privacy settings. They can eliminate some of the exposure, and they can remove the ability of tech companies to data mine them and then sell their information.
I just love what you're doing. I love what you're doing. I think that this is huge. It's monumental. It's going to last for generations if you're successful on this front. I know that they've got a lot of lobbying efforts on the other side, but congrats to you and also to Senator Blumenthal for making this your project and taking this on. It is important. Thank you so much for joining me today. Senator Blackburn, great to see you. Good stuff.
Good to see you, Trish. Take care.
You too. Again, my thanks to Senator Marsha Blackburn for sharing all that with us. I just want to read some tips from her guide to protect your kids online. You can go to blackburn.senate.gov to read these yourself. Again, blackburn.senate.gov. But one of the most basic ones is to keep your kids' personal information private. She writes, make sure their usernames don't include any identifying information. Talk about the importance of never posting specifics, including full names, addresses, schools, or summer camps. It goes on to talk about the importance of pausing before you post, stop before you shop, don't be late on updates, double check the dates. Kids under the age of 13, for example, she said, need permission before creating an account on most platforms. And then, of course, beware of stranger danger, especially on the internet. All very, very good advice as we head into those summer months and kids are out of school with extra time on their hands. Just a quick reminder, I want you as an adult to subscribe to this channel. I'd love to have you here. Do make sure you also go and download the full audio version of this podcast on Apple iTunes or on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. It's really important. And make sure, by the way, you hit the bell on YouTube. It's really important you do that because otherwise you won't be notified. And given the shadow banning stuff that we're all too familiar with, you won't be notified when these videos come out. So do hit the bell, do subscribe, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow.